Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Welcome to season two, episode two of Be the Right Club Today podcast. It's been over a week now since our first episode came out, and we got a lot of great comments about that episode, which was thank you very much all for the feedback. And we'll move on. How are you doing?
I'm good. A lot going on.
Yeah?
Yeah. Seems like a normal day in my life right now. But anyway, I got a lot of added press that I didn't necessarily need this last week. I know that. You know what I'm speaking about is the Century Tournament, where Morikawa had a 6-shot lead and ended up losing the golf tournament. And they later mentioned that that's the biggest margin ever. And I am one of the 6 other guys that experienced that. And so what I might say about that, at the time that happened, it seemed like the most monumental thing that had ever happened to me in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I vowed that I was going to not let that define me. I came home, I worked really hard, and actually ended up winning the PGA the very next week,
yeah.
1 week off in between. So if I had anything to say about Morikawa, put it behind you. Redefine what you want to be and then go do it. And at this particular point in my life, that seems really small.
Yeah.
But at the time that it happened, it seemed really big.
In the moment, it felt huge.
In the moment, it made me have the desire to do what I did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you see a lot of evidence of that. Like when Rory lost the Masters, when he was going for his first ever major. And he had a bit of a blow up on the 10th hole.
Yeah.
But then he came back and won the very next major at US Open.
So, sometimes the worst thing that can happen to us could be the best thing that ever happened to us.
Yeah.
And, one of the things that I've always tried to do was to take it all in stride and put it behind me, live in the present, not live in the past, and not try to get too far out in front.
Yep.
And that's what he's got to do now.
Yep. And to that, further for him, a lot was made about his new short game coach and his new putting coach. For him, it looked like he maybe had some technical issues with his chipping on that back nine. Can you talk a little bit about maybe when you're trying to feel something technically and how that stands up under pressure?
Well, so it's all new.
Yeah.
You know, he's early stages of working on that. And I'm sure he wasn't completely comfortable with that in his in his mind. And once the heat got on like that, he's maybe there's a little doubt that creeps in. You know, what am I doing? He's probably going over a checklist like a pilot, What do I have to do this?
Yeah.
And that's not how you play golf. You don't play golf with a checklist. You play golf with knowing, practiced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to ask yourself how.
Yeah.
You just do it.
Yep. And that very much being in the moment and,
yes.
and being in the present. And that segues nicely into our guest we're looking forward to today. So for season two, Hal, what originally was our goal for season two?
Y'all heard me talk last week about a piece of the whole. So our whole, saying for this year is we're going to put all the pieces of the whole together. And, there's so many pieces to this puzzle. You know, it took me a lot of years to learn to mature in the game. And, we're trying to make this simpler and even faster for y'all, but it's not really possible. You just take this in and each one of you are going to learn at a different speed. You're going to go further with it. Some are not going to go as far with it. But Jamie and I, our goal is to bring all these pieces to y'all this year. And, y'all deal with it however you can. But our guest today is a big piece of the whole. So, all right, we're looking forward to Dr. Justice being on Be the Right Club today. We'll be right back after a little break, and we'll bring him to you.
Okay, we have Dr. Izzy Justice joining us here today on the podcast. It's our honor to have you, Dr. Justice. I've listened to a lot of your information on the previous podcasts, and I love the kind of things you talk about and ways, we can all get better at this game, coaching and playing. So I'm just going to let you introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, thank you. First of all, Jamie and Hal, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. I think so highly of you, Hal, and the work that you're doing and the way that you played the game with so much integrity that it's just a true pleasure and an honor for me to be on your show. By way of background, I mean, there's so many things I could share, but just to keep it very, very short, I'm a neuroscientist, and most people don't know this about neuroscience, but we really are living in the cutting edge of neuroscience. We're discovering things about ourselves as human beings from a brain perspective in a way that we never have before. So a lot of what I'm going to share, you know, is really hot off the research labs and floors from across the country, including my own research. And it's just amazing to have insights into the brain. I've authored 8 books. And I also invented some of the hardware, but mostly the software that, you know, I call, for lack of a better term, until those guys come after me, I'm just going to call it the brain trackman, where, Hal, I think I showed that to you when I visited with you. You can take a look into the brain as you're putting, as you're chipping, as you're doing a full swing. And just like trackman took all the guesswork out of shots and what the ball is doing and club path and club face and RPMs and those kinds of things, you know, I believe the brain trackman is also going to change the way that we can recognize as coaches, you know, what's going on in a player's head, what's going on in my head, so we can help them the most.
Well, it resonates with me because I know in those moments where things are getting tight out there, whether it's, Tiger Woods or somebody else lurking over your shoulder, I knew my brain was working hard, and I was working hard to try to calm it down. So I know the audience is going to be extremely interested in what you know. So help them out.
All right. Thank you. So there's so much I could share, but let me start with, I think, the wake-up call. So let me share some cold, hard research and statistics that I think should alarm everybody. And Hal, you and I have talked about this offline, but we are living as human beings in a mental state that no other human being ever have that ever walked the face of this earth. And I'm going to explain that to you. So first of all, the average EEG of a person today. So think of EEG as the measurement of the noise in your head. Our brain has electricity. We've known that for about 100 years. That's not new news. We've been measuring it for about 70 years. But the average EEG of a person alive today, just a normal person, is the equivalent of a schizophrenic patient from the 1950s. And what that basically means is that the amount of, you know, stimulation that our brains are consuming is way beyond what the brain is designed for. So a good example is, imagine if you're eating food, like food in your mouth every day, and you just every few seconds you're putting something in your mouth. You can imagine after like a week you'll gain a lot of weight. In the same way, we are feeding our brains so much stimuli that the baseline, our baselines have gone so much. There's just so much noise in our head. The other two statistics quickly, and then I'll pause, Hal and Jamie, is that because there's so much noise in our head, two things. Number one, our ability to focus on something through no fault of our own. This is not an attitude or a behavior or a character issue, but our ability to focus on something is somewhere between 3 to 10 seconds. I mean, it's extremely low. And guess what? The number one distraction is not even external. It's not someone yelling at you or your phone ringing. The number one distraction that is causing our focus to be so low is our own brain. And it's our own brain saying, don't leave it short, don't hit it too hard, don't do this, don't do that. Again, going back to the baseline, just the volume of stimuli that the brain is being forced to process. Now, the harsh reality is, and this is for all of the coaches out there, you know, whether you are a golf swing instructor or a college coach or a parent even, I think as a coach, you have to understand as a parent that your number one barrier is not transferring information or skills from you to your student. It's the noise in the student's head. So I'll pause there, Hal, and see if you have some thoughts.
Yeah, I've got a couple of thoughts. This is what I talk about all the time when I say, stay in the present. Stay where your body is at with your brain. You know, you're talking about your brain moving places that we don't want it to be. That's the distractions that, and, you know, I lived with that whenever I was playing golf. You know, I was playing my best golf whenever I was right in the present, right there. Didn't have any other noise going on. I saw what I needed to do. I basically told my brain, this is what I'm going to do without distractions of don't do this or don't do that. I mean, the minute I injected don't, that's a harsh word. That's a red in your world of green, yellow, and red. Don't is a red word, absolutely, in my opinion. Yeah. And, you know, so I love everything you're saying right there, and I hope everybody out there is listening, because that's going to make a difference in their golfing life and their human life.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I work with a lot of business people, and most of them, just because they can afford me, they're very successful business people, and they'll tell me, you know, I go home, I'm having dinner with my family, and my mind is thinking about those meetings that I was just in and stuff I got to do tomorrow. And you're right. I mean, golfers are a subset of being human. And it is a global problem right now. So if you look at all of the societal, just as a society, addiction rates are high. The number one suicide demographic in all of America are children aged 14 through 21. And I have two myself personally in that age group, because they're living and dying by every light, by what they're seeing their friends are doing and what they're not doing. And so much of their self-worth and self-esteem is coming from this constant stimulation. But you're exactly right. And the real challenge, again, Hal, is whereas in your experience as a trained golfer, athlete, you know, you figure out a way, okay, if I want to be my best, I got to, as you said, I got to be in this moment. But the problem is right now, the odds that most people, through no fault of their own, without even choosing to have that thought, don't come in their head, it's going to come in. And I'm saying it's going to come in somewhere between 3 to 10 seconds. And I always tell people, and Hal, you know, you can attest to this, and Jamie too, when you played, if you're in the middle of your downswing, just think about this. If you're in the middle of your downswing and someone in the gallery or one of your playing partners yells something, it's very understandable that you're going to flinch or just going to mishit that shot, right? But now think about that. Instead of somebody external doing it to you, you are doing it to yourself through that silent noise in your head, like don't go left, don't leave it short, or this is for par, or I'm already two down, I only have one hole to go. So all of these kinds of thoughts, you know, I think if you're a coach or a parent, again, you know, I don't know that you can be an effective coach. And I say this, oh my goodness, with all the respect and love for parents and coaches, I don't know that you can be effective as a parent and coach without understanding, my goodness, you know, that my number one battle is, you know, what is the noise in this student's head? So that, because if it's yellow or red, which is not good, red is really bad, yellow is kind of normal, green is very good. Green is what you said, Hal, I'm in the moment, I'm present, I don't have any other thoughts. Red is I'm mad, I'm angry. But these are actual brain states. These are not just random colors, because the brain has electricity. And when there's a lot of noise in your head, the electricity is high. So the brain becomes hot, like temperature hot. And that's why when we get nervous, our palms sweat and the hairs goes up in the back of our neck, because we're trying to cool our brain down. So red is the universal color of heat, like the radar on a weather map. So when we say red, green, yellow, it's not just some random hypothetical philosophical thing. It's the actual state of your brain. And yeah, I'll just pause there and get your thoughts.
You got a comment you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, I see that a lot with you can tell when you're maybe teaching someone in the moment or trying to coach someone. You can tell maybe when they're not quite grasping something, and you feel they're getting a little frustrated. So I would imagine in that moment that person's brain is in that red state of mind. And trying to get them into more yellow and green, bring them back down and calm them down, is hugely more beneficial than maybe trying to force the point whilst they're still getting really frustrated.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I was thinking about while you were talking about all that, you know, it's almost contradictory to what the world wants right now. We're living in a world with a lack of patience. I want it right now. Give it to me right now. Yeah. And, you know, understanding the brain and what state you're in and everybody that's on the team, so to speak, that is also understanding that we've got to move at a pace that everybody can understand. And sometimes parents don't agree with that. Sometimes coaches don't agree with that, but we've all got to get on the same page of, okay, where are we at in this process of being able to absorb this into our brain, process it, and use it effectively?
Yeah. And Hal, I'll share with you another statistics that, let's say that you want to teach one of your students something at any level, a pro to a junior golfer and everyone in between. And you want to teach them one thing. Maybe it's a backswing position, or maybe it's a posture thing or something, just one thing. If your student is green, which basically means there's no noise in their head, so there's no competition for your instruction, it will take roughly 10 minutes on average for that knowledge to transfer, be absorbed, and be retained by that person. If the person is yellow, which is normal, it'll take roughly an hour. If they're red, it'll take you 4 hours. And that's just one thing. So I think part of being a good coach is you need to assume, and again, this sounds harsh, Hal, I know, but to me, the first 5-10 minutes of every coaching lesson should be, you know, they just came from somewhere. They're a human being, right? They came from a relationship, a job, a location. They came from looking at their phones. So the first 5-10 minutes of any coaching and instruction should be, how can I get this student to green? How can I get my kid to green? And you can do that by asking them fun stuff, by injecting positive memories, by, you know, there's so many, so we call them neurohacks, but there's so many different techniques, and some of us do it naturally. But I think to start a lesson knowing that your student is yellow or red, you're just diluting your own effectiveness. And the second that they hit the first shot and it's a bad one, which typically happens when you're trying to learn something new, you're not going to get it on that first swing. You've just made them even more red, which means your ability for that subsequent comment or idea is now compromised. Not because they're bad people or they're disrespectful to you, but because their brain now is going to a place where, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I'm not getting this. This is worse than how it was before. You know, that noise begins to go up. And so now as an instructor, you have so much competition. So I think the red, green, yellow is a very simple, non-judgmental language. You're not saying, oh, it's a bad attitude, or they're mad, or they're angry, or they're frustrated. You know, just associate, okay, if they're red, that means they're not going to listen to me effectively. I got to make them green first. And it's a very easier way as an instructor to make it easy for your brain to make that adjustment.
How quickly can you get someone from that red to green, do you think?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. And to me, that's the beauty of the brain trackman that I have, is that we don't have to guess. Now, most people will give you cliches like, well, take a deep breath or take a moment. And taking a deep breath is good, but guess what? It doesn't work for everyone. And so there are different techniques that you can use. And we talk about it a lot in my book, JiraGolf.com and all those places. But we call them neurohacks. You know, so for example, and I can do one with you very quickly right now. You know, if you were to, and Hal, you and I did this, you know, a while ago when I had you kind of squeeze something. But
right.
You could even say, hey, Can you show me some of your favorite pictures on your phone from like just the last week? And have them open up their phone and have them describe something fun that they did. Now, are you telling me that if they're opening up their phones and they're describing, you know, a walk in the park or a dinner or something with their families or a good tournament or something, that their brain isn't going to shift from yellow and red towards green? So these are called neurohacks, and you can learn them and you can be trained on them, but sometimes it's something physical. Like you can just gently squeeze the club, you can close your eyes and, you know, begin some type of a structured breathing, like a 4-2-8 is a very popular one where you take four breaths in, you hold for two and you breathe out. I personally like ones where they're telling you something because now they're engaged and they're, you know, you can say, hey, what was the last good round that you had? Or tell me the best shot you've hit in the last 2 days. Where was it? What hole was it on? And suddenly their brain is going there to recollect that and then to communicate that to you. Mm-hmm. But again, I want to say that a coach must have skills. You know, it's almost like having a speedometer on top of every person's head, and that needle is moving. And it's going to move from red, green, and yellow every second. And if you can have that invisible speedometer over their heads and say, ooh, I just said something and it annoyed them. Oh, I just said something and it worked. But I would say if you feel like the student is green, proceed. Talk however you wish, do however you wish. If they're yellow, you kind of got to work a little bit. And if they're red, you just got to stop. Mm-hmm. Go outside and go for a walk. Go sit, change the environment. Because that red brain is not going to make, you know, it's not going to hear you. It's like arguing with your spouse or your significant other. I always tell people, if you're arguing with someone that you really care about and you used logic, like really good logic in the middle of that argument, did that ever work for anyone? No.
They're not ready for logic, are they?
No. And it's not because they suddenly became dumb or stupid, but because they're red. The first thing might be to go hold their hand and say, honey, I love you, or to hug him. Then use logic. It's the same thing with instruction. You first got to make sure that their brain is open to understanding what you want to teach them or what adjustment they have to make. Does that make sense?
Totally. Totally. You know, I wish we could go back to about 1978. And I have what you're talking about in 1978 when I still had some skills to play golf. But I mean, and the reason why I bring that up is resources that the kids have today, the knowledge that we have, the difference in the knowledge from 1978 to 2023 is immense. And, you know, what I see happening in here is they're not really as ready to hear these things. Like I mentioned yesterday when we were talking that, you know, I had the pleasure of working with Byron Nelson in 1978, 9, and 80, 81, 82, that 5-year period of time. I spent a lot of time with Mr. Nelson. And, you know, the first time I met Mr. Nelson, I was totally aware of his background and what he had done and the respect that he deserved and that I was going to give him. You know, today you don't feel much of that anymore. You know, kids come in and they don't know anything about history. They really don't know anything about the game. I was a history buff when it came to the game. I respected the game that much. Now, not so much. Just tell me what you know and I'll use it if I can. And that's a feeling that I get when I come in here. It's like, and I immediately want to say, let's stop and think about how much we really know in here.
Yeah.
You know, don't give me this attitude that you know everything, because trust me, you don't. And either you'll listen to me or this game is going to harshly teach you this.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, Hal, I will just, because I have a 16-year-old son and I have a 19-year-old daughter in college. So I'm right there. And, you know, it's hard for me to believe that children are suddenly bad people. But it's very easy to be bad when the noise in your head is so high. And I'll tell you something, Hal, whether it was the 50s or 40s with Mr. Player and Mr. Nicholas and Mr. Palmer, or your generation, or you know, technology has changed, equipment has changed. Do you know what has not changed? The brain.
Right.
And if you ask Mr. Nelson, or if you ask, you know, Bobby Jones, tell me that round that you played that was so amazing, when you were playing your absolute best, that round, tell me what you were thinking and feeling and doing. And if you asked, you know, Bobby Jones that in the 1920s, and if you asked Tiger Woods that in the 2000s, and if you ask Rory McIlroy today, I will bet you every penny that I have that no matter what decade or generation, the answer is going to be the same. And here it is. I was calm. I was focused. It's like you said, there was not noise in my head. You know, everything was slow. So the one thing I also want to state is that when you ask people in any sport, in any endeavor, when you were your best, what was that like? Like the first five words, descriptors, are all about the brain, about the green brain. Calm, focused, slow, everything was big, you know, relaxed, in a zone. They say things like that. They don't say, oh, my backswing was perfect. Oh, my alignment was good. Oh, my weight transfer was good. And so I think as coaches, we have to adopt that as well, that if we can get our kids, which I think what you experience with these kids is normal, because I see it with my own children, I see it with their friends, is, you know, I don't think that they're bad people or they're disrespectful. They're so young that they don't even know that they're being hijacked by their own brains. And that is a human condition. And I worry so much about our children and about human beings because, you know, 7 years ago, if there was something that maybe just annoyed you a little bit, but today everybody's baseline noise is so high that that same thing, you want to start a fist fight. And that's a human condition. That patience, that compassion that you talked about, patience, that, okay, let me just sit quietly and listen to Mr. Sutton, you know, I don't know that it's intentional that they do that to you and to every adult. And that's where I think we as adults, we have to, whether we want it or not, honest to God, Hal, if I'm being completely honest, all of us have now become mental health workers.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here listening to you talk and I'm thinking about, I'm going back to whenever I was in college. And I had one thing that I was trying to do every day. I was going to class. I was making halfway decent grades. But my first and foremost thing that I wanted to accomplish was to get better and better and better as a golfer. I didn't have anything from the outside world other than my clubs doing the talking instead of my mouth doing the talking. I wasn't trying to be liked. I wasn't trying to make a bunch of people happy over here. I just had one thing, which was a quiet brain for the most part.
Yes, sir.
And now kids have so many other things because of this right here and because of social media and because of everything else. And I mentioned this on the last podcast. I would love to see the world go back to, let's let the clubs do the talking and get paid for rather than the mouth and the social media and everything else. If we got back to that point, it'd be a lot better world. But it's a complicated process to get there, isn't it?
Absolutely. You are so right. I will tell you, and your story is, I wish everybody would think the way that you did, which is I'm going to have a quiet mind. So in my opinion, from a neuroscience perspective, let me share with you why I think golf is the hardest sport of all. Now, that's an opinion, right? Because everyone will say that. But I'll give you valid reasons because I'm a scientist and, you know, I deal with data a lot. So first of all, golf is a target sport, is it not? You want to send this ball somewhere. It is a target sport. So what makes golf the hardest sport in the world is that your eyes are not on the target when you're hitting the ball. And when you're on the tee box, well, it's a big target, so you can get away with it, or it's a big green. But when you're chipping or putting, you know, and your eyes are down, where is that target being held? It's not held in your muscles, in your arms, in your wrist, in your stroke. It's being held in your head. And if there's a lot of noise in your head, you ain't going to hold that target.
So when I'm teaching in here a lot, I tell kids all the time, what does your mind's eye see? And what I'm basically saying is, what's going on in here right now at this particular moment right now? You know, when I look out at a target, it's important that I get it set in my head so that when I look down at the, everybody always asks me, what are you looking at down there? Nothing. I'm not looking at the ball. I'm not looking at anything because my mind's eye is still on the target out there.
Yes.
And if you get so locked in on the ball here, your brain can't function out there. And
that's exactly right, Hal. So I've done 13,000 brain scans on golfers. So that's, I think, more than any other human being ever has. And let me just explain to you what you just said. So I'm going to say the same thing that you just said, but from a neuroscience perspective. All right. And this is why golf can actually be a very good mental sport. It doesn't have to be as hard as it needs to be. Okay. So most people in their pre-shot routine, they spend a lot of time taking the target. I want to start the ball here. I want to move it there. I want to da-da-da-da. And then they go back down with their head down at the ball, which you have to do, and they've lost the target. So holding the target, to me, will do a couple of things, which are both magical. Number one, from, again, a brain trackman perspective, you'll find that if the target is in your head, if it's playing in your head, then suddenly your muscle sequencing, your swing, all those kinds of things will suddenly be a lot better because you are telling your body what you want it to do. It's a very athletic move. It's almost like you're reacting to that target. The other thing that holding a target, so one, it'll reduce the dispersion of your shots. If you hold a target, especially with putting, before you hit the shot. But the second thing, and get this, Hal and Jamie, is if you are truly holding the target in your head, well, what does that mean? Well, that means I'm not thinking about the past and I'm not thinking about the future. I am thinking about this moment. I am living in this moment. And that is cathartic. That is therapeutic. That is meditative. It is a pleasure to see a tree out there and say, I'm going to start it there and move it right. That is such a better thought than don't leave it short or don't hit it left out of bounds. So if you can do that, not only is your golf performance better, but your wellness becomes better. And then it's the same skill when you're having dinner with your children or your family and you're putting something in your mouth and suddenly you start thinking about work. You say, no. Let me put my attention here in this moment to my kid's face or to my spouse's face and let me move my focus just like you want to move. You want to hold the stimuli that is the presence of your loved ones around you when you're having dinner at night. So holding a target, what you said, talk with the eyes in your brain. I love that so much from a neuroscience perspective because it reduces your dispersion because your body naturally will. You know, I don't know who it was. Maybe it was Seve or who else. You would know Hal better than me. But someone asked him once, how do you hit a draw or a fade? And he said, well, I don't know. I just see it. You remember that? Someone, I don't know who said that. But that's...
It sounds like a Seve comment to me, but... Yeah. But you know, to me...
Go ahead.
I never had to go over the mental checkpoints of how to hit a fade or how to hit a draw. You know, I looked out there. I saw the target. I knew it required a fade. And I'd done it so many times, my body just set up into that position and I did it. You know, I didn't have to ask myself, well, how did I do this?
Yes,
you know,
sir.
So when you get asked a question, how did you do that? It takes a few minutes to actually put that into words.
Yes.
Because, you know, this brings up a good point that I want to get you to talk about. Muscles don't have memory. You know, you've told me this all the time. So share that with them.
Yeah. And again, I think, I don't want to be critical of you know coaches because I know many of them and almost all of them are just amazing people. But I think in the old days we relied on quantity or volume to discover something. And so, I mean, I think it was Ben Hogan that said, you know, learn it from the dirt or dig it out of the dirt or something like that.
Yeah.
But the reality is that our muscles, they have absolutely no cognitive function. They don't make decisions. They don't take stimuli. I mean, our eyes is the camera and the video camera. It takes the picture of your target and gives it to your brain. And then the brain sends that to your muscles to go do. Think of a quadriplegic. Their brain works fine and their muscles work fine, but the something in the spinal cord is broken, and so the communication cannot happen. But muscles do not have memory. They do not have any command functions. They take their commands from the brain. And so if the brain is yellow or red, something in your golf swing and for sure your ability to hold the target is going to be off. So that's why I think when you're teaching someone, I'll go back to what I said, if they're green or if you're on the range by yourself and you spend 4 hours on the range, well, if you're yellow, you know, almost 80% or 90% of what you did in that 4 hours is completely gone. It's worthless because your brain is so heavily distracted. But to the point again, muscles do not have memory. This is not my opinion. This is neurophysical, neuroscience fact. They take their command from the brain. That's why when, as a parent, as an instructor, it's so important to understand the role of the brain to change neuromuscular patterns and those kinds of things.
So on that point about memory and, you know, improvement going forward, what do you suggest for coaches out there? So we talked a little bit about it in the past, but if you're giving a lesson in the morning, then that person's got a whole day ahead of them looking at their phone or they're at work and they've got a lot of other things going on. What do you recommend for coaches out there to help their student with memory retention?
Yeah. So again, this is a harsh reality of the modern world. This is the world that we live in today. It's not the world, Hal, that we lived in 7 years ago and certainly 10, 20 years ago. But almost 90% of what we experience in a day, it's actually a lot more. I'm being conservative with that number, is going to be either forgotten or not recorded by the brain when it goes to bed. So if you have a lesson from 10 to 11, I'm just making that time up, right? And let's say that the lesson went amazing. They got it, there was an aha moment, you feel very good. So at 11 o'clock, they leave. And let's say that they go to bed at 9 p.m., like me. I'm telling you that in excess of 90% of what happened between 10 and 11 o'clock with you as an instructor is completely gone, because now it's diluted by all of the other experiences and the consumption, because it's so much, it's nonstop. Like, we can't even drive without texting. And do you know how many times I've seen drivers driving without texting? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Even something that requires us to be so focused, we're still being distracted. So that's why I keep going. As an instructor, as a teacher, as a parent, our number one competition is the brains of our students. So the thing to do is, number one, I would say, make sure that your students are constantly green during your lesson, because that'll just make the absorption of that knowledge so much better, which will increase the retention of that knowledge. Number two, and it doesn't matter where you are in that 1 hour lesson, when you are at about the 45, 50 minute mark, so you got 10 minutes to go, stop. Just stop. And save the last 10 minutes to what I like to do is I make them do a selfie video. So take their phone, make a video and say, okay, before I go to bed, what did I learn here that I want my brain to retain? Because if you don't tell the brain what to retain as you go to bed, then the brain is going to do its job. And do you know what the brain's job is in terms of retaining information? Do you think it's going to remember the good stuff or the bad stuff? It's going to remember of all the bad things that happened during that day and record that. The brain is designed to do that because it's a survival tool. It is not going to remember that amazing tip that you taught them at 10 o'clock. So this is a human condition. These kids aren't bad. Golfers are not bad people. You aren't bad people. But we are becoming victims. You know, Hal, when I was talking to you, I called it the silent pandemic.
Yeah. So something that you were saying a minute ago that was popping up in my brain, after teaching for a couple of years, I began to see that I would get further with people if I wouldn't let them hit a ball. If I made them just make a golf swing, trying to accomplish whatever we were trying to accomplish in their swing. And I could make them look great on video because they weren't trying to produce a result. The ball was the test. So the clutter in the brain from the ball stopped us from being able to progress. And it's 100% the case in here. Most people think they're not progressing if they don't hit a ball and don't get a result. And that's it's right. The exact opposite of that, honestly.
That's exactly right. You are so right. And I don't know how many times in many conversations that you and I have had over the years, Hal, that I've said, Hal, you are right, and I can give you scientific evidence for why you're right. And this is another case where, you know, hitting ball after ball is, you know, it's increasing the quantity of the brain waves. We have to give the human brain a few seconds, a few minutes, especially after a good shot, to allow their brain to record just what happened, to process, oh, you hit a good shot. Tell me why you think you hit that good shot. Where was your hip? Where was your arm? Where were your hands? What did you feel with the ball? What did you, and the more of this cognitive input that you can give in that learning moment, it's going to increase the retention of that knowledge. Because ultimately, what is the value of your amazing lesson with them if they're going to forget 90% of it before the end of the day?
Right.
And I don't think that you instructors want that. That's not in your spirit. You know, you genuinely want to help these kids, but that's why I'm saying your words and your instructions, they're not going to their muscles, they're going to their brain.
Right.
I've got a question, and again, this is for both of you, but I'll start with you, Dr. Justice. So for parents out there who say maybe watch their kid play tournaments, and they can maybe see that kid on the course getting frustrated, and obviously they can tell they're in a red zone in their brain. How do parents or coaches, what kind of tools can they use, or what kind of things can they do with their kids to try and help them be more aware when they're slipping into that mindset?
Yeah, I will give you an example, and then I will explain, because I am a father. I have a 16-year-old son who plays junior golf. I probably go to 20, 25 junior tournaments a year. So the question that you're asking is very, very near and dear to my heart, and I see it every single time I go see a tournament. So I'll give you an example. And so you're asking me for a specific action item. My son was playing in a junior tournament. This had to be a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that. And he was on the 16th hole, and he was playing very well. I think he was right at even par. It was a difficult day, but he was shooting even par. He was hitting fairways and greens and putting. There was no drama at all. So on the 16th hole, he was in the middle of the fairway. And when I follow my son, I'm never with him. So if he's on the tee box, I'm in the fairway. If he's in the fairway, I'm on the green. So I just kind of watch from afar. On his approach shot in hole number 16, and I believe he was leading by three at that time. I'm not 100% sure, but he was leading. He completely sculled his second shot. He completely sculled it over the green. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he was in a state of shock. So he goes up for his chip shot, which is over the green, and he duffs it. And he proceeds to make double bogey. Now, as a parent, we are only supposed to stay on the cart path, so I'm not allowed to say or do anything to him, which is no problem. So he makes double bogey, and I see him in red, red, red. And so he's walking off the green, going to the next tee box, and I'm crossing paths with him. As I cross paths with him, I say to him, Skybrook. And I keep walking. Do you want to guess what that word is or what that name is? Jamie?
I have no idea. Okay.
Skybrook is the name of a golf course where two weeks earlier he shot a 68.
Yeah.
So I took 10 steps. I said, Skybrook, I took 10 steps. I turned my head back and I looked at him. And he had the biggest smile on his face.
Yeah.
So that's called a neurohack. So yeah. So all I'm saying is that I think the parents' job on, especially in competition, is to make sure that their nonverbal communication, which is 90% of all communication, by the way, that their nonverbal communication is always communicating something that the child is going to respond to in a positive way. And I find so many parents unintentionally, when their kid misses a putt, their hands go up or they go, oh, their hands put, they put their hands in their head, and the kid sees that. And now they've gone from red to even further red because in their mind, they've disappointed their parents. So for parents, I say, work extremely hard in understanding the power of your nonverbal communication. Be very aware of where your hands are, of where your head is, of what you're looking at. If you're texting all the way through the hole while your son or your daughter is playing, you don't think that your son sees that? You don't think that in their mind they say, yeah, dad doesn't care, or he's just walking around? Or if you say, oh my gosh, or whatever it is. So I just think some self-awareness can be very powerful. And then just have these, because I could have said lots of things when I crossed paths with him. I could have said, Hunter, you got this. So keep going. Oh, you're still in the lead. I could have used all those cliches. And he wouldn't have had the brain impact that me saying Skybrook did. So parents may want to have a list of the things that their kid has done that's very good. Just say one word. Don't lecture them. No summaries, no paragraphs. Keep it short because they're still in the middle of competition. You know, because I see parents coaching them so much, like, dude, stop. They are trying their best, number one. And number two, you're not a golf instructor. You know,
so Dr. Justice, I want to tell you, when we started episode two, I used the term a piece of the whole, and I want to connect all the pieces of the whole as far as a human being and as far as a golfer is concerned. And what you're talking about today is a big piece of the whole of a golfer. And you know, I'm thankful that you've come on Be the Right Club today, because our goal this year for golfers out there is, you know, no one piece of the puzzle is going to make you reach the dream that you have. It's going to take all of these things together. And as Ben Hogan said, digging it out of the dirt, that takes time and it takes patience and it takes awareness of all team members of where we're going, you know, and one team member can tear you down, just like a parent that is lecturing the child and everything else all the way. That's making that brain go more red instead of moving towards green.
Yes, sir.
And I push everybody to go to Dr. Justice's website, go read his books, do all these things. Tell them where they can reach you at.
Certainly. So my website is gyragolf.com. So G-Y-R-A. By the way, G-Y-R is green, yellow, red. So G-Y-R-A.com, gyragolf.com. Carl Morris and I, if you go to mindfactor.com as well, we have a lot of these brain hacks that you can do, especially when it comes to putting as well. So you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at isitjustice or at Dr. Justice. I'm always putting stuff out there. And again, Hal and Jamie, thank you so much for allowing me to be here, but to also shed light on this very important human condition. And like I said earlier, we can, if we are smart about it, we can make golf a therapeutic endeavor where you're enjoying the beauty of a bunker and a tree and a pond and a lake. It's beautiful out there. And it's only not beautiful because your mind is doing all kinds of other stuff.
Say it better. Yeah. that's the enjoyment of golf. But yeah, thank you very much for joining us. It's an honor to have you on and get to share that with our audience. So yeah.
This won't be the last time, Dr. Justice. We're going to have to revisit this again and again and again.
Thank you, sir. It was an honor. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you. Have a good day. well, Hal. That was a fantastic session with Dr. Justice. Wow, there's a lot to take in there. A lot of great points that he made, and as we've referred to again, for season two, we want to bring all the pieces together to make people play better golf, and what better place to start there than with the brain, with Dr. Justice.
You know, we don't ever talk about the brain very much. You know, when I started talking to Dr. Justice a year ago, he made so many points. It was like he had been there with me for the last 20 years. And, you know, I knew at some point we had to bring him on. And, I mean, this won't be the last time that y'all hear Dr. Justice on Be the Right Club today, because that's how important I think understanding your brain and staying in the present and, you know, parent-child relationship, coach-student relationship. You know, he talked about it from the standpoint of a kid most of the time, but this applies to adults and everybody. This is a human condition. This is not just a golfer condition. You know, I find myself trying to immediately text somebody while I'm driving down the road. You know, my wife is hollering at me. I also find myself, something's bothering me from that day at work, and my wife is talking to me, and I'm looking over here thinking about something else.
Yep.
You know, I'm not giving her the proper respect. It's a condition that we're all struggling with.
Yep.
And I think understanding what Dr. Justice is preaching is pretty important for all of us.
Yeah, one of the most important points that I took from it, which I love what he said, is being out in nature and enjoying being out there. Because it is beautiful. Golf courses are beautiful places, and you're out where the trees rustling, the wind, the birds are out there. Like, and the more you can be in the present and enjoy hitting to a target, being more external, looking at targets and taking aim versus being internal and over the ball. And maybe even that's thinking a lot about technique or thinking what's going on at home or dealing with that stuff. And I think a lot of people can have a lot more enjoyment of the game playing it more with target in mind.
Well, I love that. But here's one more thing I want to bring up. Change your expectations. You know, we all go out there with an expectation to shoot our best round. And it's the minute we get derailed, so to speak, it changes the whole outlook on how we focus for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go out there with the expectation that I'm going to try to keep my brain in the green. And the minute I move into the red, I'm going to try to divert back into the yellow and then into the green so that I can enjoy the day. I can enjoy my round of golf. And if I can do that, I'm going to get back on track sooner and I'm going to get closer to reaching the expectation that I had set for myself. So maybe changing your expectations might be good.
Yep. And we've talked a lot about it the last few days when you were out there on tour and competing against the likes of Tiger and Jack. Those guys were masters at taking a situation where they might be in the red and adjusting to be in the green.
So I'm glad you brought that up. You know, Tiger and Jack have been considered maybe the greatest managers of their game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think of Tiger having a great golf swing. I think his brain's a lot sharper than his golf swing is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that Jack Nicklaus was incredible at managing his game. He knew his strengths, he knew his weaknesses, and he played into his strengths and away from his weaknesses. And the minute he got into a weakness, he moved back into the strength as fast as he could. So what are we really saying? He understood when he was in the red, and he moved back to the yellow and to the green as fast as he could. That's what the greatest players in the game know how to do. And they don't have a lot of time spent in that red.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you understand what Dr. Justice is talking about, and y'all think back over all the times in professional golf that you followed your favorite player, whoever that may be, and you've watched them through the trials and errors of their game, you will think back, man, they moved fast back into the green, or they were marred by being in the red all day long.
Yep.
You didn't find that much with Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods.
The more I talk about this stuff, the more I realize I played a lot of my golf in the red.
Well, I think we all have, and I think that's the point of having him on.
Yeah, Exactly. Just to give us more awareness of where our brain's at. Yeah. But yeah, that was a fantastic interview. And, you know, moving on from that, we have a lot going on here at the Academy. And then with you, Hal, how are things at Darmore?
Oh, they're great. We're working on the Bear Ridge right now, which is a real famous hole. You know, we're trying to take the templates out at Darmore and use them, but not just make it a cookie cutter. There'll be our version of the templates that are... Yep. And some of the greatest golf courses in the world mm-hmm. have done this. And, you know, this is a big undertaking for me. Yep. And I'm so grateful that I've got the opportunity to do this. This is one of those things that'll live on long past me. Mm-hmm. You know, we forget about our scores that we shoot and all that sort of stuff and our failures, like we talked about losing a six-shot lead.
Yep.
But this is going to be here for a long time to come.
Yeah.
So it's important to me that I do a great job.
Yeah, and the piece of property I was lucky, I think last week, I managed to get out there and have a look at it, and it's spectacular. The land is really special, and the way you can apply those template holes but into that land is going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, the Academy here, moving on, we've got some new clubs in, so if you're all in the area, come check us out. We got our new Callaway, new Ping clubs in for fittings. We've got our junior clinics every Saturday. We're just starting up a new member fundamental workshop. So for members of the Academy, we're going to get that kicking on, a little kind of fundamental clinic just to help those that are fairly new to the game get off on the right foot. So I'm looking forward to that. Check us out. Check us out online. We've got our Instagram, our YouTube, our website. If you're interested in membership, come check us out. Hit us up on the website. So yeah, the future's looking good.
A lot of good things coming, y'all. We're going to have some great guests on this year. So happy that Jamie and Jamie are here in the Academy, and look forward to next week.